Hello, everybody, and welcome. I've been getting a lot of Twitter traffic about Ty and wanting to see an amazing deep dive into it. And I'm going to go, it's not as deep as, Fowler and I would normally compete about doing deep dives and going as deep as possible. But half an hour constrains us a little bit. So let's get into this. And it looks like Justin joined us just in time.
Hi.
That was a pun and I didn't realize it, but well done. So let's get into running through this. So I want to first of all cover a little bit of what we hopefully got out of the keynote again, which is why do we care about Tyre to the first bit. I'm going to gloss over a lot of this, just quickly recap it, because I'm hoping that Fowler and Hunter managed to cover this pretty well. So today, if you want to get started, you got to just do something simple, not even something complicated like a big fancy microservices architecture with 80 microservices, as Kelsey said earlier. You just got a web app that wants to talk to an API. Right now, in here today, the problems you get a bunch of problems. You can make Visual Studio or Visual Studio Code or whatever tool run multiple applications at once normally. Right, it's a bit easier in Visual Studio than other options. But then you have this problem where if you've just done .NET New Web a couple of times, everybody's trying to listen on the same port. You need to go manually configure all of those. Then you need to go configure every app that wants to talk to another app to have another config key that points to that other to those things. So you have a bunch of config files, all with URLs, all pointing to each other. And God help you if you want to change them. And then in production, you need to go make all of that config work over there as well, or point everything to some service discovery, centralized service discovery system. You would have seen one of those. Steeltoe, for example, solves this with a particular way of doing service discovery by default, when you saw that earlier with David DeRuff. And then if you want to, on your local machine, use message queues or Redis or SQL Server or something like that, there's nothing really in the box to help you get started. So Ty wants to solve all of those. Now, what have we got today in the ecosystem, like Docker Compose? Could Docker Compose be a solution to this? And the answer is maybe. It solves some of these problems. It certainly lets you run up multiple containers at the same time very easily. It lets you do a lot of this, get your dependencies in there. The little bit of a problem with that we thought as .NET folk is, well, then you have to have gone through all of the effort of learning Docker before you can even get started. And that seemed like a little bit of a higher barrier of entry than what we were really happy with. There's a fairly steep learning curve. And even as Kelsey said earlier, it's not necessarily, you don't really necessarily want to containerize your app during development. You don't necessarily want F5 to go into a container. That's a pretty heavy hammer to wield. So, you might need to do it for some reason. That's why we have kind of the debugging tools to get into there. But in general, it's probably better if you don't. That's kind of some of the premises that we started with Ty on why we didn't just say go with Docker Compose or something like that. So we have .Ty, and it has a bunch of these things that you've seen and we're going to continue to talk about further, which was the solution to a lot of these problems that I just kind of listed. So let's talk a little bit about the app that I'm going to show you today, and I think Justin is going to show you today, which is this voting sample. Now, this sample is in the Tyre repo, so you can go grab it from there if you want. We've been doing a lot of work modifying this, and we'll merge those eventually, but it is all in the public, so you can see it. And the premise of this app, if you've seen this in this is common in the microservice, in Docker land at least, where you have a vote, which is a web page, which has a button. You can either vote for dogs or cats. Right, then it uses Redis. It puts that vote, your vote, on Redis, and you can change your vote. Then it puts that vote onto Redis. Then a worker picks it up from Redis and adds it to a Postgres database. And then there's a results page which shows you the results of how many people have voted for either cats or dogs. It shows you a pie chart. And today in this, we've secured ish because we did a little bit of things that were a little bit bad in order for the demo. That results page with identity server. So there's a dedicated authentication kind of service that does all of auth, right? Which seems like a very nice microservice-y thing to do. So first off, let's show you some stuff. So let's open up code so that I have code going. But let's first of all just run this with Tyre. I'm using this thing that says this thing called dtyre. It just means that I'm using my local copy of the Tyre source code rather than a pre-installed version, because Justin and I have both actually been hacking on Tai and on the sample app at the same time. Every time we try to do something, we would say, oh, there's a great feature idea there. Let's go do that. And then we would sometimes hack those in. So this is stuff that you've seen before. This is Tai booting up all of the things in my solution. And what I'm going to do to show you what that solution contains is switch back to the dashboard. So here you see I've got my Vode app that you saw earlier. I've got a Redis container that has been spun up at the same time as I ran. I've got my worker project. I've got a Postgres database, the results app, and an identity server. So that entire diagram that I just showed you was just spun up all at the same time. And all of these things have been configured to be able to point to each other and run. And so now if I open up a new tab, I can vote for like dogs or cats. I can go to my results page. And it's going to prompt me to log in using identity server. So this has redirected me to the auth service in this case. And I'm going to use the default stuff because we're using like in-memory usernames and passwords and all the default identity server stuff, basically. Then I'm going to log in. And then I have this beautiful pie chart with only one vote where I can either vote for whatever I want. And as I vote for things, it'll like change, right? So you can see the pie chart kind of animating over there. So that's the application. There's kind of an amazing amount of stuff that just got kicked off all at once. And unless if we look at some of the features on here, we can go look at the vote at the view at the logs for my application. I can in here somewhere, like just here, you can say, oh, I'm adding a vote for this voter ID for this for, and they're voting for A, right? So you can see that stuff is starting to appear in the logs. And then I could, if I jump over to the worker, I can probably see, yeah, you can see it processing each of those votes as it go, as each of those votes change, right? And then I also have logs for example, the database server kicking off, right? And then there's something interesting in here. You see a bunch of this stuff at the top here. This is actually the Docker run command that this project used to run this Postgres database. And at the moment, you can see a whole bunch of config variables being set, worker service port, for example. So I had a few questions on Twitter earlier about config and how Tai does some of his service discovery. And the answer is we have a convention for how we configure your apps to all talk to each other. And that, which basically boils down to you get, we when we're launching you, we set environment variables with the port numbers and the URIs for all the other services in the solution. And then in your project, so for example, in here, when I'm configuring identity server, I can say configuration, get me the service URI for identity server. Right. And you can do that for any other service that's in there. And when talking to something like Redis, you can say, get me the connection string for Redis. And then down here, in my Tai YAML. So in this case, because I've got a more complex solution, it's not just .NET code. I've also got database dependencies and stuff. I have a Tai YAML. You saw it running without one of these earlier in the keynote. So in here, I do things like say, this is my Postgres service. This is the connection string for that Postgres service. And then any other service in this solution will have a config key set, which is in the order of, I can't remember its exact format, Justin probably can. It's something along the lines of Postgres colon connection string, something like that.
Yeah, I think it's service underscore underscore Postgres connection string.
So there's a convention and we have some code that gets that hanging straight off of the configuration builder. Okay. Now, if you are so kind as to go try this out, I'm going to remind you again towards the end, this link up here takes you to a survey. Please go fill out that survey. Helps us a lot. Charles is probably in chat right now, our user research guy, saying, make sure they go do this survey because it helps us define the future directions of Tai. It helps us understand who in .NET is actually trying this and using it. So please click that link and go do it whenever you try out Tai because that helps us a lot. Same for Blazor if you click and do the survey for Blazor. Now, that gives you a whirlwind tour. This is a quick... this is a quick talk, so I want to keep things snappy. I was trying to say snappy, I think, at the same time as doing a keystroke combination. My keyboard doesn't have F5. It's like the worst in the world. Anyway, so then that gives us the idea of the local story, right? It's running all of those as local processes, and you saw earlier how Fowler could decide to run them in containers, and you have that containerization aspect. So now you've seen that thing running, you've seen some logs, you've seen the dashboard, you've seen that it can make things a lot easier. Now we're going to move into deployment. Then Justin, I believe, is going to talk to all of these. And I guess I will press next every time you want rather than doing the machine dance. How does that sound?
Sounds good. That's totally fine. Eventually, I'll steal it, though, to do the demo potentially. But For now, yeah, thank you, Glenn. So to start off, like, we recognize much of the problems that existed with the TIE run experience today. However, we noticed that for TIE deploy, not many things handle a lot of the things that TIE deploy does today, simplifying all of Docker file creation, pushing images to Docker, creating Kubernetes manifests, all those things effectively create an experience where you can deploy something to Kubernetes without having any configuration locally besides the TIE YAML. So go ahead and go next slide, Glenn.
Sure thing.
So the first step here is going to be recognizing the difference between our projects that are like .NET projects, so our voting app, our results page, the worker, and authentication, versus the things that I would consider more external, like Redis and Postgres. TIE today does not deploy these directly to Kubernetes. It requires pre-configuration, which is either done via like creating the Redis image within the Kubernetes context, or providing a connection string to something else like Postgres hosted on Azure SQL for or Azure database for PostgreSQL.
Yeah, so I think the way we think about this is for generally your dependencies, you probably don't want TIE to deploy them. You've probably already got them running, either because they're a managed service or you've already configured them on your cluster. So we expect you to give us a connection string for things like Redis rather than us just creating a Redis for you.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So the next step is going to be doing something with these .NET projects. So what we're going to do here is we're going to first put all these Docker or all of these .NET projects into a Docker image. To do this, what you first do is we do .NET publish on each of them to get the publish output. We create temporary Docker files to be able to call Docker build on in order to create these Docker images. Afterwards, we go ahead and push them to a container registry. This can be any container registry like Docker Hub. Mm-hmm. It could be Azure Container Registry. There's many different options.
You saw the Google Cloud one earlier with Kelsey's talk.
Oh, yeah. And then finally, now that we have these images on a container registry, the whole reason we did all of that was to be able to reference them within a Kubernetes manifest. So in order to actually finalize this, TIE creates Kubernetes manifests that reference these images and actually applies them to the Kubernetes context. Wow, look at those transitions.
Yeah.
with this, TIE also sets up all the environment variables that we saw earlier inside the Kubernetes context, such that when you actually have an app or have a service running within a Kubernetes cluster, you can see that app having all the environment variables necessary to communicate with all other services within the cluster. Awesome. Can I steal presentation at this point?
Sure. Yeah.
Sweet. Let me go here. Can you see my screen? Glenn, can you see my screen? Just to confirm.
I don't know if I'm going to. Okay. Let me see. Oh, yes, all right.
Awesome. Sweet. So I went ahead and already did a TIE deploy for the sake of time, considering my internet died. So what we're going to see here is we had a few things go on. We see that the projects were published. We built Docker images for each of them. We pushed these Docker images, and we also did some validation of the secrets that were mentioned earlier. So making sure that Redis and Postgres were both set up beforehand. Then at that point, we generate the Kubernetes manifest in order to actually put in Kubernetes. For Redis, we also see that we're kind of skipping everything here because, again, we mentioned that we expect you to pre-configure it. Finally, I wanted to talk a little bit about ingress. So in order for this app to actually be available to the internet, what we realize is we need to actually have some way to access some IP. Ingress is effectively gives you the ability to expose parts of your Kubernetes cluster to the internet. So what I did is I actually set up a definition inside my TIE.yaml to define stuff for the ingress. What this has here is it has some paths here to reference the voting service, the result service, and identity server. So when I actually access those addresses at the whatever IP I'm hosting at, you'll be able to get those. All right, so now let's actually go take a look at the app. I already have it deployed and I have it running at this URL. I have an aka.ms link here, TIE demo. You can go to, and if you would like to go vote on your own machine today, feel free to. I'm going to vote for dogs because those are clearly superior. If you go to the results page,
Amy disagrees. Wherever Amy is right now, she just set up an alarm.
It's okay.
Amy is our TIE PM, and she loves cats.
Yeah. So, anyways, we can see that the page is constantly updating right now. We see people voting for cats.
Yeah, look at all that.
I don't understand why.
Look at them all. Just look at how
people
many
are toggling back and forth. What a shame.
Yeah.
Anyways, we can also log out from here and go from there. Awesome.
So yeah, if you look through this text, you can really see the order that we're doing things, right? As we were prompting, you can see where we prompted for secrets, right? Where we validate here, where it says validating secrets, where it didn't prompt, right? Found existing secret. So what that means is the first time you run a deploy, it'll prompt you to say, hey, what is the configuration? What is the connection string for Redis? You'll give it to it. After that, the second time you deploy, it's going to say, oh, I've already got a config key that matches the name I would use for Redis. I'm going to assume that's the right one. And then if you ever go delete those manually on the cluster, we'll ask you again the next time around. And that's kind of the way that works. So if you use the Kubernetes CLI, you can see all of these containers now running. You can see them all getting up. And it's a really quick way, really good way to just quickly get everything up and running on Redis, including configuring all your public endpoints with that ingress, which because by default, you do this without ingress and nothing is publicly exposed. So you can get to it via the, you know, port forward command in the Kubernetes CLI, but you can't necessarily get your friends to hit it or whatever.
Exactly. So as you can see, I'm just going to do a little bit of a browsing of the Kubernetes stuff. So we can see that there's 5 pods here. 4 of them are the .NET projects that we're currently running, but one of them is the Redis image. I decided to configure Redis to be in cluster as an example. However, I actually have Postgres hosted on Azure Database for Postgres Suite SQL.
Right. And the way we do that is just we went and found the Helm chart for Redis and said, Helm, install Redis for me on this cluster. And then it went and created the Redis container images. And then the configure, so the connection string just points to those containers, but Tie doesn't have anything to do with deploying them, is the way that we did that.
All right, cool. Let's, Glenn, do you want to take the slides again?
Yeah, I can take the slides again. Yeah, let's do this. So here we have a slide of more features, and I'm just going to go down and talk about some of these. Some of these you wouldn't have seen before. The first one, which we just added, and you should probably go try it out. We don't have deployment support for this, but we have local development support, right, Justin?
Yep.
For Azure Functions. And so the way this works is you can add a function to your app, and Tai will take care of knowing that it's a function and running effectively the function's emulator locally on your machine to let that function run and then participate in the service discovery stuff so you can go invoke it, right? So that's Azure Functions and Azure Functions support. And then we have Dapper. This has been around for a lot longer via our Tai extension, where you can have Tai knows enough about Dapper such that it can run all of the sidecar containers for you automatically without you filling your Tai Yammer with those, just by saying, I'm using Dapper.
Mm-hmm. Right? And this works for both the run and deploy.
And then Dapper does work for run and deploy, whereas functions we still haven't got to deploy. We only did the local run support. So then we have ingress support, which you saw a little bit of. That lets you define your ingress rules so that it's working for locally and deploy. And one thing I don't think Justin got to show you is when you're running ingress, and you didn't see it, when you run locally, we also run a local proxy so that you have that ingress experience on your local machine as well as in your Kubernetes cluster. And so then you have this local proxy that's proxying all your traffic as well, so you can have the experience of using a local reverse proxy as well. Then there's also some support. And if you look at the build talk that I did with Ryan Nowak, I think we show a lot more of this. So you can have some diagnostic support with Zipkin, Seek, Elastic Stack, things like that, to be able to get distributed tracing, more structured logging, ability to search across all of your logs, and a bunch of cool features like that. So just like Kelsey said, logging is super important. One of the other things that can be really important is correlation across services, and that's where things like Zipkin and stuff can really shine, is correlating when I did X over here, Y over here happened, right? Mm-hmm. And then multi-repo scenarios. I've had a lot of comments asking about this because not everybody has a single repository where they put multiple microservices in it. So a lot of people are interested in how do I have multiple repos that I then use with Tai? How does that work? And we have a doc on our repo that talks about some of the support we have for this. We have the ability to reference other repos, reference other Tai YAMLs and things like that. I don't know if we've 100% nailed it yet, but we're still working on it. We're happy to hear all your ideas about that.
We're still playing around with a few things with it. We're still trying to figure out whether or not like having some sort of packaging format is going to be good in the long run.
Yeah.
We're playing around with a little bit of CNAB, but we're still not 100% landed on anything yet.
Yeah, still experimenting, right? You could imagine, for example, a team completely independent of you taking a tie for a solution using tie and say publishing some artifact, and then you could just reference that in your project, and then when you run, you would go run all their stuff without you necessarily knowing anything about it. That's kind of the idea of bundling. We don't do that right now, but that's one of the ideas we played with. So happy to hear from you if you want to come talk to us about the ideas you have for that, or what you think would work with your workflow even is always valuable. Feel free to go create an issue, throw the idea label on it, talk about whatever you want. We'll be there in GitHub mm-hmm. in .net/tie. And then we have Tie build, push, deploy, undeploy, right? One of the things that's interesting, Tie push, now remind me, Justin, that's the one that just goes to the registry, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Right. So a couple of people asked, like, well, if I've already got this like flow for being able to go to Kubernetes, one of the things that Tie push lets you do is just take your project, push all the images to a registry, but not do the final deploy to Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. So then you could have something else kick in and take over if you've already got some other way of deploying to Kubernetes, for example.
We recognize that there's so many people that whether or not they have a system set up today to do their entire CI/CD versus a system that did just like they have absolutely nothing. We're trying to make sure that Tie has some sort of potential way to do any of those. So adding Tie push as an example allows people to handle all the Docker files within Tie, but you know, if they already have something set up for Kubernetes, might as well let them use it.
Yeah. Another thing we have a couple of samples on but haven't necessarily nailed is how you manage your SPAR JavaScript front end in your Tie solution. But anyway, that's everything from us. I believe that's all of our time up, right? Timekeeper Jeff over there, master of all the times.
We do have just a few questions here and a couple minutes. If you don't mind, I'll share my screen over here. And
if I say yes, I don't totally mind, what would
happen? We'll throw you out. That's
okay.
It. You're gone.
Okay,
in that case,
I don't mind at all.
Let me bring up the tag board here. We can take a look at some of the questions that we have here. You started to go down into a common question that we have here from a few folks, like Peter, asking, does Tie also work with non-.NET applications? Perhaps right. Angular with SQL Server databases.
Right. So obviously SQL Server databases, yes, because we showed the demo of Postgres, for example, and SQL will work exactly the same way. SQL Server runs in a container as well, for those of you who didn't know. So basically anything that you can find a Docker container for that you can run locally and use as a dependency can just be a dependency in Tie in general, right? Because you should be able to configure it to work. For Angular and such, we have kind of a couple of ways you can sort of get it to run at the same time. We haven't necessarily put first-class support in, for example, for creating a Docker image for your Angular app, right? We're not yet sure about how far down that path we want to go, whether we're better off sticking to what we know and being much better at deeply understanding .NET, or should we be spending more time making it more broad and supporting many languages but potentially not being as good in any particular one, for example. We're still a fairly small team working on this thing, but that's also why it's still an experiment, as we said. Like we're still heavily in the experimentation phase, trying to work out exactly what we think this should be and what the future of it should be. So again, the best way for you to try and make sure it supports Angular is to put your vote in for Angular and come talk to us about it. Or talk to us more specifically about what you think the best support for Angular might be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Terrific. We also do support Docker files. So if you do have a previous Docker file that is for a certain project, like even like a Node app or an Angular app, if you have a Docker file that you've already written, we will run it with Tie.
Yeah. The idea is you just drop it next to your CS proj, right? It'd be the idea.
Well, not necessarily CS proj. You can just point a path to your Docker file.
Yeah. That as well. Yeah.
Very cool. One more question I want to sneak in here. And this one is from Bob Crawford asking, how do we use Tie in our CI/CD pipelines?
Thank you, Shane.
Yeah. So that's an interesting question, right? So you could, if you wanted to, Tie is a command line experience. So obviously you could invoke it if you want to, right? If it completely matches all of your requirements. I assume that right now, where it stands, there's going to be a lot of gaps and edges in trying to use Tie, to invoke Tie in a way that just goes to Kubernetes straight from your CI/CD flow. What I expect to see more of is things like using Tie to get to an image registry and then doing something else, right? But this is another area where we're still talking about it a lot. We've got lots of ideas for what it could be, but we're still not sure what the best approach for us to be is. Should Tie play in that space? Or should Ty stick to a slightly different box and let the tools that are experts in that space continue to be tools that are expert in that space? So that's another area that we would definitely want your feedback on. Mm-hmm. Right now, the options are basically run Ty and let it deploy to Kubernetes if that's what you want. But I expect there's going to be probably not quite what you want right now, and then you should talk to us about what you hit. Or use it just to get to a registry so you don't need Docker files and stuff because you're just doing .NET or just doing whatever the thing is. You're not doing anything complicated in Docker. And let it do that part for you. And then after that, do different steps to automate it in your CI/CD flow.
Mm-hmm. We already we do have a doc that Shane Boyer contributed recently to that talks about Ty deploy with GitHub Actions. Yeah. That's something you can try. Like that, we will not say, oh, don't try it. But like again, yeah. We do say, like, you know, this is not necessarily something that's production ready at this point. Yeah. And you know, use at your own risk.
Yeah, we just want to hear from you to tell us what you think is good or bad or ugly about it.
All right. Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate you joining us for this segment of .NET Conf. And we're going to get ready for our next speaker. Clemens Vasters will be joining us.
Hey, excellent.
All right.
I'm glad I was before Clemens and not after.
Yeah.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
All righty.
Really
take care.
Bye-bye.